Hello, everybody. It's your girl once more. Joy Has Questions coming to you with another amazing episode. And I am going to start it as I always do with You Better Know. Today's You Better Know is going to be featuring the works, the life, the amazingness of ancestor Asa Philip Randolph, better known as A. Philip Randolph. If anyone remembers this, I think it was like an HBO or Showtime movie, like had to be late 90s, early 2000s. It was called 10,000 Black Men Named George. And it was basically based on this man who organized and led the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, the first predominantly African-American labor union. Now, this country is built on labor unions, but all too often they rarely have people of color. Unions, as we know, are protections for the worker against basically the company, making sure that they have equal access to fair working conditions, financial restitution in the event of getting hurt. These are all protections that completely were not afforded workers for the longest time, and especially to African Americans. Now, the reason why it is so amazing what Philip Randolph was able to accomplish was because, number one, he had tried forming other labor unions in the past, but it wasn't really successful. But he kept at it because he believed that this was something that definitely needed to take place for the betterment of everyone. On top of the fact that not only was he persistent, just even taking a step back in terms of why the movie was even called 10,000 Black Men Named George. The Brotherhood of the Sleeping Car Porter Association was directly going against the Pullman Company. Now, if you never have heard of the Pullman Company was run by George Pullman. He manufactured railroad cars in the mid to late 19th century through the first half of the 20th century, which was known as the railroad boom of the United States of America. Now, I know a couple of weeks ago, I talked about our ancestor Elijah McCoy and how his engineering efforts and his patents were the reason why everyone wanted his machinery on their trains, because trains were the main way that people got around this country. They were the original airplanes, if you will. Another aspect as to why this was so epic was because the rudeness that those who were afforded the ability to even be on train cars, let's keep it real, majority of the time, white people, was the fact that if you wanted to get something on the train, whether it was a newspaper or a meal or you're ready to go to bed, all you had to do was call for George. Didn't matter if George was named Philip, didn't matter if George was named Tyrone or Rufus or W.E.B. Du Bois, just the level of disrespect. Everyone got called George. It's like literally saying your whole existence does not matter because you just work for George Pullman. And if anyone has ever been to the Pullman, or I should say the West Pullman community of this city, now it is, you know, run down or trying to go through a resurgence. But in its heyday, George Pullman was one of the richest men in the United States. And his old mansion, which is of historical significance, is one of the biggest structures I have ever seen. Even for something built in like the 1900s, it's pretty fucking impregnable and just pretty epic. You can't take that away from him. So the fact that Asa Philip Randolph was just like, I'm tired of the bullshit, we are definitely going to do something about this, was just beyond amazing. Not only did he have a successful strike to ensure that the union was recognized, but he also was the lead organizer for the March on Washington. Now, everyone knows that the March on Washington was one of the most epic civil rights moments in this country. Dr. Martin Luther King delivered the I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and it's something that, if for nothing else, will always be burned into the minds of our community and our society. But to have this man, to have Asa Philip Randolph organize it in conjunction with Bayard Rustin, who was also one of the lead strategists for Dr. Martin Luther King, it just shows the beauty of collaborative work as well as doing something that is for the betterment of everyone and not just for self. George Pullman was for self. All the other Robin Bears were for self. The Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans, everyone. When you think about this society and capitalism, it benefits nobody but those who the system was already created for. And rarely do people of color find ways to crack it. So shout out to Brother Asa for all his contributions, his work. I just kept it brief because honestly, there was so much stuff to even cover. If I'd have done that, we'd have been half the show would have been talking about him and his efforts. But I just wanted everyone to know, if you've never heard of Asa Philip Randolph, you definitely need to do more research on him in terms of his activism. And if you have not seen 10,000 Black Men Named George, definitely, I think it's just a great kind of like quick synopsis to even understand his life and his contributions. So now we are moving right along into me introducing my phenomenal guest for the evening. Y'all, okay, so when I tell you, I didn't know if I was going to start the show today doing like the Beasley Creed or if I was
not the Beasley
Creed. Right, B, believe it, like, no, for real. I didn't know if I was going to start the show doing that or being like, Mama, I've made it. I'm interviewing the official interviewer of Chicago. Like, I feel like, for real, like watching you and your ascension has been bomb. You have always been a very, I look like I've lost Isaiah. What are you doing?
No. Okay. See, rule number one of podcasting. Don't pay attention to what I'm doing. People are listening. They don't know that I'm recording video of you looking like.
I've lost Isaiah. Like, I'm tired.
You're looking like yesterday. Yeah. That is Mog looking like.
Hold on. But you start Jacob's Ladder. Like, start singing. So, I am climbing. Jacob's Ladder. Like, it is rough. Oh, wait till I throw the weekend judge on it.
You're beautiful, sis. Okay. You're beautiful, man.
Thanks, bro. But I have the one and only Domati Pongo in the building. Thank you.
Whoa. Is this when you cool, like, the cue, the applause? And
yeah. This going to be, like, the air horns.
Yeah, all that. Yeah.
No, I'm super excited to have you on this show.
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be here. I'm a fan of Joy Has Questions since way, way, way back. Since back when you had 20 followers and whatnot, and when you had five posts. And what I admire about you, and you talked about this, your motivation message, is your consistency. You know what I mean? And it's very hard to remain consistent, especially. People think it's hard to remain consistent when people congratulate you, but sometimes that can make you complacent. And the fact that you've been consistent is an inspiration to everybody trying to make something happen. So, well, I appreciate watching your growth.
You.
It's dope. Yes.
Thank you. It definitely has been something that is like, just keep your head down and keep moving straight ahead. Because if I get caught up looking at all these bitches, you know, with the waist trainers and the flat tummy tea lollipops, and I'm just like, all I have to do is just hold up a sucker and my life could change.
Flat tummy lollipops now?
Lollipops. That's an oxymoron. That's
so you can suck something to make you lose weight?
I like what you did there.
Don't you bungle, everybody.
He's going to be at the original Jokes and Notes this Friday. You know how everybody on the show like used to come on and be like, yeah, I'm at Jokes and Notes this Saturday.
Every
11.
Single time. I'm at the Laugh Factory.
Right.
All that good stuff. But nah, this is dope. And yes, you popped on without having to tip flat tummy tees and sell them or them weird like teeth whitening laser things.
You know what? I will say this though. Activated charcoal will change your life.
Activated charcoal will.
Well, yeah.
I do. I brush with activated charcoal.
I was about to say.
And Chew Sticks. I meant to bring something I was going to give to you. Anyway, I'm getting you off track. I had a gift for you. I'll bring it to you. I really did. I had a gift. I got these journals, Pongo Strategy Group journals. I don't know if you journal a lot.
I do. I'm a lame.
Yeah,
I love
me too.
Doing that.
Me too. Journals are good because, you know, the word says write the vision and make it plain. And yes. I think that thoughts are things, and I think that words are things. And it's not less important to put things in your phone, but when you write things down,
let me tell you something.
It's different. It makes it tangible.
Strike a line through something, I feel a release or a relaxation that I do not get from on a phone. I am a traditionalist. I love writing things out, crossing off my list.
Yes. So I got leather-bound Pongo Strategy.
Oh, this
branded.
Is fancy.
Oh, they're fancy. Okay. They're fancy. I've been running around all day. The only reason I don't have it, but you live down the street. So right after this podcast, I'm coming back and I'm bringing you a journal.
Thank you.
But it's super dope. And it's spiritual. When you cross things out, I mean, I have done practices where I write down negative influences in my life, things that I don't want to happen. I'll rip, write them all down, and I'll rip up the piece of paper. And it's worked.
I am here for this. See, this is why we have always, yes, we better have this common sense and ancestral presence.
Yes.
Okay, but thank you.
No doubt.
So we are going to diverge just briefly and then back to that positive space.
For sure.
But we just got to talk about the fuck shit real quick.
Okay.
So, according to IG, let me preface this by saying, if you have children, whatever birthday party you want for your kids, that's between you and whoever's chipping in on it, which is typically the parents. So I'm not out here trying to say, like, no one can throw parties for their kids. But if your parties have racist or bigoted origins, I don't care what the explanation is. What I am referring to, over the weekend, Kevin Hart and his wife, Aniko, threw their son Kenzo a birthday party. I think he's 1 year old. The point is they had his birthday party, and they did it as a cowboy and Indian theme. Now, I understand that on top, and a lot of people don't realize this, like, oh, that's a theme, cowboys and Indians, the fighting. But I'm like, that is, especially coming off of Thanksgiving, which is also known as, like, Native People Genocide Day.
It
wasn't the best or, I feel, the most tasteful party concept. But I understand the fact they didn't do a deep enough research.
Yeah,
and I love how Black people, we love saying, I'm 1/16 Chippewa. You see this one wave, girl?
Great.
And as much as people like to claim that, the fact is there isn't a lot of Native American blood at times within, like, African Americans. That's, like, kind of almost like a rumor. And if you think I'm wrong, Henry Gates said it first. Like, it's not me just saying.
The irony is you look very Native American.
You know what the funny thing is? Now, my family actually has proof
that they were there.
We're talking about, like, great-grandparents.
Got you.
I'm German, African-American, and Native American.
Got
you. So those are the main components.
Well, German, African, and Native American would make more sense.
True.
Yeah. Well, bloodline wise, yes.
You're right, because Jim Meyer. The point is, I was blessed to do my ancestry.com without having to pay for
it. Got you. But I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, though, because think about what you just said when you opened the segment. You said, you know, the baby, she was cute, chunky monkey, and you meant it out of love. And I do this with my nephew, too. You know, we say, oh, little monkey, but we don't mean this. And my nephew is mixed, right?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Half Italian, half African. And you don't realize that innocent things have been perverted by white supremacy. And there's nothing innocent about cowboys and Indians, because we came up from the John Waynes and the white man was the savior and he was killing the Indians, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I do understand how American families can fall into these tropes accidentally that are offensive. And unfortunately, because Kevin Hart has a platform, we make it seem like everyone with the platform is automatically an intellectual.
True.
You know, and he has responsibility, he has a platform, but it was probably a teachable moment. Sometimes people don't know. Imagine your ignorant cousin who funny, tells some jokes, made it. Now this mofo family birthday gathering becomes a thing of public spectacle. And he didn't learn his history. We didn't learn. Only reason we knew it because we both went to Beasley. So, like,
that really matters. The foundation. Like,
you know, for those outside of Chicago, Beasley is one of those, was a pro-Black magnet school for gifted kids. And even if you weren't gifted, they taught you how to be gifted.
Right. I remember, like, in the hallway, remember the paintings? It was like the banjo lesson. Like, they had, like, iconic African-American paintings.
Garrett A. Morgan. I wouldn't have known that the streetlights were created by a Black man
that
had those
the
colors.
The Lasting Shoe Machine by Jan Metzlinger. Like,
I was Charles Drew for, like, dress up as a hero day one day. Like, who did the doctor
who
made the
Washington.
Plaza. Come on, man.
Okay.
Come on. This is what I'm saying. But everybody didn't have that experience that we have. And so it doesn't mean we don't call them out and teach them. But I think sometimes, especially the Black intelligentsia gets into this space where we expect people to know what we know.
Mm-hmm.
And because they have a platform and responsibility, we want them to exercise it. But I'm sure if he knew, he would have did better.
Will say, okay, so to your point, I do agree with the fact of the polarizing times. Everything is, like, under a microscope.
Yeah.
And people at times are hypersensitive.
Yeah.
I think it's also a thing of when for so long no one has respected, you know, other people's cultures or their own, like, societal groups. It's like, look, I don't give a fuck what any the next one is getting this good read.
That's a good.
So I understand it. And it's like, we've created that environment because for so long we haven't cared about marginalized groups. We haven't cared about like listening to another person's side. We've been cool with Columbus came here.
Right.
They split, you know, meals. Maybe a little smallpox happened. It was a mistake.
It was a mistake.
Or it's like,
right,
girl, what you're calling, you know, illegal immigrants, y'all call it the Homestead Act. Like, I'm sorry, how you homesteading some shit for people that are already here?
Right,
like,
facts.
So
facts.
That's the thing for me where it was just like completely understand your point and the fact of he didn't know. I think the reason why I got a little bit more agitated was his response.
Oh, what was his response?
Which was more defensive in the sense of
this is
like,
my first time hearing the story, by the way.
Okay.
So I'm speaking from a place of...
No, you're fine.
Just going
his
off
response basically was like, okay, come on, y'all. Like, as kids, did we not all play this game? And I'm like, that's fine, and I understand where you're coming from. The intent wasn't there, but now I feel like you're doubling down and you're not even listening
to
what the issue actually is.
And to be fair, I'm going to contradict myself in the point I made previously, but I'm a Gemini. We do that from time to time. To be fair, when you have that much access, agency, wealth, whatever you want to call it, at what point do you start to educate yourself on things that you don't know about? And so if something comes to your attention, it's on you to, you know, to sit down and say, hey, or, but I, then on the other hand, so like, this is going to get irritating because I'm going both sides. But then on the other hand, I feel like celebrities get irritated with perhaps the PR person coming in saying, hey, Kevin, are you sure you want to do the Cowboys and Indians party?
Right.
It's like, I'm going to do what I want. These are my kids. You know what I mean? So
if he wants to be Mufasa, damn it, then he's going to be Mufasa.
I'm a black man. I know about discrimination.
Exactly.
I can marginalize whoever.
So, and you hit it. Say that part. That's the thing. I think a lot of times, I do not believe that black people can be racist. And now we can, you know, have our conversation about it. But my thing is this. I do not create the structure in which I am oppressed. So therefore, you cannot turn around and be like, oh, well, you know, you're being racist. Actually, no, because I don't benefit from this societal structure.
Right.
Now, what I do say is black people most certainly can be prejudiced.
Facts.
I've seen it happen. But I will say in this situation, you're wrong, in my opinion. Like,
yeah,
this isn't...
He's not right, you know, but...
Or at least be willing to have the conversation as to why that might have come up, you know, as offensive to somebody.
Yeah, I think it opens the door for a lot of conversation. But I think it also makes us think about how many rituals and traditions we have that are painful, that we don't even recognize that there's pain in it. Because I never met a Native American, but I have met an indigenous person and quite a few of them when I lived in Minnesota. And I didn't realize I hadn't met any indigenous people until I went to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing them. And I was like, oh, I've never just seen Native Americans kicking it at the bar, chilling, just doing like, we don't have them in Chicago. We have them. They're here.
I think you get what I'm saying. Like in the traditional sense, like my friend Ashley, she was actually my second interview ever for Joy Has Questions, and her whole, I believe it's her father's side of the family, like her grandparents are Native American. Like she goes back, if it's not to Arizona, I believe it's to Colorado, and she's every summer she spends like a part of her time
where they're
really
connected to the culture, and you can see it. It's obvious. I bump into a lot of
the traditional, you know, space that I've ever seen reflected. Everyone else, I feel like, kind of assimilates into American culture.
Word. So you don't really become aware of a people until you interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you haven't had the privilege of having some cool Native American homies to kick it with, you don't even realize what you do. That's even the fact that we said Cowboys and Indians. You know what I mean? You don't even really understand until you immerse yourself in that environment. And so I can empathize with people who haven't had a chance to. Because, I mean, there's a lot of learning I had to do about rhetoric and things that I say that are hurtful. I don't mean to be hurtful, but, you know, and I've had to educate my white homies on why what you said wasn't cool. You know, so... I can empathize with it. His response, I'm not really vibing with. But.
And I know it wasn't done out of like him trying to be clearly a bad father. It's a birthday party for his son.
It's a terrible father.
Right. How dare you?
How dare you
spend this money? Also, randomly, since I did quote or mention Mufasa, I would personally like to take the time to thank James Earl Jones for staying healthy. For staying with us in the land of the living. When I heard that he was going to play the voice, I literally went, God, you have one job. Just keep him alive.
Protect him.
To 2019. Call him afterward. Because let's be real.
I like to thank Throat Coat Tea. I like to thank Lemon Honey.
I would like to thank Genetics. But, like, let's be real. Who, if we did not get James Earl Jones as Mufasa, I would have never wanted this remake.
Yeah.
There's no way you can.
Would you take
a
Would you take a Morgan Freeman Mufasa?
No.
No. Time has set on my time.
It needs to, because I am not. Take your ass back to Shawshank's Redemption. I don't want to hear this. That was fine with March of the Penguins. That was cute when he wanted to play Christ with Bruce Almighty. I am not. I want James the Earl Jones.
James the Earl Jones.
I want, like, Bill Cosby, black exploitation, a piece of the action, James the Earl Jones.
Yeah, facts.
I don't want anybody else.
How do you feel about the CGI version of Lion King? Are you with it?
So the reason why I am with it, well, because see, now we're going to get into the marketing aspect of Disney is out to kill us. I'm convinced.
Disney is trying to murder us?
Here's why. Because the emotional, like, tizzy I've been in for the past couple of weeks, I also just found out they're doing this one too. So now we have Toy Story 4 coming out June 19th, which is a month before Lion King.
Uh-huh.
They bring in back Dumbo, the live action one. They got Colin Farrell playing the dad. Like, that's about to be epic as shit. You also have Mary Poppins returning. And then they just dropped Aladdin. And now they got Tarzan coming back. All in 2019. I don't even know when they had like, they are the ultimate Beyonce album. They've been doing all this shit secretly.
You know, but you know what they do? The only reason they even come up with generational, you know, Gen X, Gen Y, millennial, is for marketing reasons.
Because we're all now parents. And we're all now,
technically, so everybody in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, we're nostalgic. We want to take our kids to see it.
I don't
but
give
we have
about
it.
Your children.
But we want to see it.
If little Shatani can't get, if it's between me and her, you'll be consoling a 5-year-old. Because I'm going to be looking like.
They know exactly what they took every
it's a
film
rough life, sis.
That we grew up on and brought it back.
And come Aladdin?
It's fucking genius.
It is epically genius. But I will say, in terms of the live action part, which you asked, I think they used the Jungle Book as the tester, and the response was so incredible. I actually loved the live action. And even when I was watching Black Panther, I was like, remember the scene when he's talking to his father and his father comes out the tree? I'm like, they're testing this to see how it'll look. Because that's reminiscent of Mufasa when he comes back to talk to Simba. When he's in the, it's the same thing with T'Challa. And I remember.
I feel like the meme with the high dude with the hoodie, like, yo.
From the white, yeah.
Yeah, you
They've
right.
been testing it to see, like, what the response would be.
Yo, you deep, B.
Oh, no. I see the internal strategy meetings happening. Like, okay, that's so the response was great. Yeah. I think the bigger thing for me, I know I can hear the hive slowly buzzing.
Mm-hmm.
I was most concerned, and I am still concerned, with Beyonce playing Nala.
Why are you concerned?
I guess the thing is, I want to make sure I can let go of my childhood expectation. Beyonce,
you got big Nala expectations?
No. Hold on. I am Nala. She is me.
You do fake look like Nala. Y'all like the same complexion, same nose popping
Nala
off.
Nala didn't take nobody's shit.
Don't you look like Nala.
Let's back up. Let's even just back up. Even as a child, I don't give a fuck if you about to be king. You still need to get your weight up, which is why I keep pinning your ass.
Right.
She definitely also knew how to encourage him, because even though they almost got killed, she was like, well, I thought you were brave. She was trying to be a friend.
She a rider.
She is a true rider, but she also was not about to sit here and play herself while Simba over here rolling around eating worms and shit with Timon and Pumbaa in the height of his fuckboy years.
I'm going to see how much you, first of all, you just went crazy. Who was the actress that played Nala, though?
It was a white woman. I got this because I just remember. Hold on. Nathan Lane playing Timon. The fat man played Pumbaa. I remember her. Nev Campbell from Party of Five.
You're good.
Yes.
You're good.
I was like.
So you cool with a white woman playing a South African?
No. Hold on.
Okay.
I was okay with everybody from the cast getting switched out.
Okay.
Because like you said, when you know better and you think about it, as a child, I wasn't thinking on the back end, well, who's being represented in this South African story? Like, who's in the Serengeti?
Right.
I was just happy. I was like, oh, this is bomb.
This is bomb, yeah.
But now I like the inclusivity and keeping it real. Like, this should be a black cast. It's in the heartland, the pride land. I guess my thing is I'm just used to her voice register being higher, and Beyonce has a huskier, a deeper, milky voice.
Yeah,
people don't like. We're so used to always seeing the clips of her singing and roaring, doing. I'm like, she don't sound like that when she talks.
The great thing about Beyonce, actually, is it's a plus and a minus. Are those Maduro cigars sitting up there?
Yeah.
Y'all finished them. I was like, I'm bringing y'all a gift. I would love to leave with one. They got this case of Maduro cigars sitting. I just lost my train of thought.
No.
Real classy. Y'all fly. This, first of all, can I say, I'm going to get back to the point, but this apartment is made for a man, by the way. We're recording.
What?
So, you know, I believed myself, went to the bathroom, and over the toilet, there's this very beautiful, picturesque, almost 3D picture. So as I'm, you know, handling my business, I'm just looking and gazing and thinking about my future. It's like waters and it's one of those pictures that's drawn so well. It's a portrait. It looks like the waves are moving. I'm like, this looks like a scene out of Lion King. So you know a woman who's a player by the picture over her toilet, because that's only for men, because women, I look in the opposite way because y'all always sit down.
Good
and use
point.
It.
I never thought of Jasmine. Who you out here? Okay, finesse guy.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, Jasmine, I got some single buddies. We could talk after the podcast. Let me know what's going on. But that's when I knew. And they got cigars. They got a random baseball player that's black on the White Sox over here. Bobblehead.
That's Harold Baines.
I don't watch baseball. So, everybody's random to me.
Okay.
I don't watch baseball.
I have three words, ladies. I say this all the time. You're going to ho-ho correctly, and here's why. No salary cap. That's all I'm going to say.
That's facts. Like, that's facts. So, that's why y'all know the baseball.
No, I know him because my father was very much involved with the White Sox organization.
Got
he
it.
Was basically over there, like, official fan club.
Word.
He was really good friends with one of the longstanding organists for the Sox and the Cubs, Nancy Faust. So that's how I used to watch the games as a kid. Wow. I would sit in the booth with her, and she would play. And I'm like, this is fun, Dad! Like, yeah.
That's legendary.
I'm bleed black and white. I'm actually a very big baseball fan.
I'm a White Sox fan by default.
Obviously, and the lines, we know. Because
it's.
You know what is interesting, though, in this city? You want to see a fucking battle take place?
What's that?
It's not even between black people. Put a South Side Irishman and a North Side Irishman against each other.
Oh, word.
They will blow up the entire block.
What, Bridgeport versus Wrigley? It's going down.
It literally, it's so interesting. We don't even talk about, I think. We always are in this city like, okay, lines of demarcation, black versus white, or the haves and have-nots. But no one really talks about the disparities, or I should say the social issues between the North Side Irish and South Side Irish.
I didn't even think about it.
Super interesting.
No, that's facts. No. But what I was going to say initially.
Yeah.
Facts. Beyonce, yes. Her voice is so recognizable, but she does very few interviews. So even though we all know her voice when we hear it, we don't get to hear it a lot unless you're really into Beyonce.
Right.
So even when I watch Princess and the Frog, I'm like, okay, was that the movie with Princess Tiana?
No. That was Anika Noni Rose.
Who did Beyonce play? She played somebody
Beyonce
in the
wasn't
movie.
In that movie. She was in, it was a movie like with a B. It wasn't the B movie. It was something, she played like the queen. I think she played Queen Bee of the Hive.
Well, Beyonce played a cartoon character. And I remember watching. And I'm like, I couldn't get out of the fact that this was Beyonce. But we also really don't hear her speaking voice a lot.
True.
You know,
but
and so I think that serves her well as a voice actress.
For as amazing as she is as a performer and entertainer, she definitely is a legend at this point.
Yeah.
But she actually says, like, she gets nervous. She doesn't like speaking.
Well, she's not a poor speaker.
She's not. I think sometimes, like, she gets in her head, but that's to me what has, like, she's very cerebral, even though it seems like she's just, you know, sexy and dancing all the time. But the movie is going to be super de-duper epic. And also, shout out to Beyonce.
What's the name of the movie, Epic?
Are you serious?
The name of the movie was Epic.
Well, look at God.
Look at that. That's what I'm talking about.
But not only that, Shout out, what I was saying was shout out to Beyonce for having her team cover. Because people, when I say all the time, think about the bigger picture. Figure out how like branding and partnerships and what your trade-off is by knowing your worth. I found it super interesting that for Coco, which was one of Disney's highest grossing movies last year, which was about that little boy in Dia Los Muertos, Day of the Dead. I was wondering, how the hell did Chloe and Halle get the title track? If y'all think for a second that Beyonce was not like, so I'm doing the soundtrack for The Lion King. I'm also playing Nala. Mm-hmm. I might have a back-end production credit somewhere. Mm-hmm. And also, my girls are going to be on soundtracks for y'all shit, too.
Right.
Because exactly. And it's not even being shady. Chloe and Halle ain't Latina. They ain't of the Hispanic diaspora. Like, that ain't their thing. So I'm just like, how did they get on it? Beyonce. And that's an excellent example of like holding your people down and also including them when it comes to your own deals.
So right, exactly. Like, that's how you put people on. It's funny because you, but what's funny about it though is because Chloe and Halle, they open up for it, they got mad access, all of that. But it lets you know there aren't any, it's kind of encouraging to be watching their rise and watching them come up under a Beyonce because they still haven't popped on. Mm-mm. You know what I'm saying? So like, the fact that even that cosign, the cosign of cosigns, the queen bee, you still have to put in that work from the beginning, which goes back to what you said in your opening piece about the idea that you, no matter what, you still have to put in the work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, somebody can throw you the alley-oop, but it's on you whether you what you do with the ball once you get it, you exactly. know. So, I don't know. It's salutin'. It's crazy they got those opportunities, but you would think they would be megastars by now. They're still early in their career. What are they, like 12? Like
No.
They're like 18 or something, right? Like 17?
It's taken me the longest to even figure out who is the oldest. So
I thought they were twins. I only know about them because of my lady. I don't even know about Chloe and Halle.
They're not twins. They're clearly family genetics or whatever, but I hate to say this because I can't tell them apart. The thicker one is the younger sister. Mm. So the one with the lighter, airier voice, she's the one that just graduated from high school. And her sister's like right behind her. So I know they're like 17, 18, or maybe they just turned 18. But their buzz has been slow, even having Beyonce as, you know, basically their backer. And to me, it's ridiculous. Just those girls mm-hmm. can sing their ass off. And not only are they amazing singers, but they do all of their arrangements.
Do they have an album out already?
Oh, hell yeah. They didn't have several albums out. And actually, my favorite way to view their artistry, I love them on Grown-ish. Grown-ish is my show.
Yeah, okay.
Because they play two of Yara Shahidi's friends and dorm mates on the show.
Got it.
And honestly, they're fucking hilarious.
They got it. They got that it.
They do. Yeah. And that's why I'm just like, it's crazy to me, like, what has to happen, or it's always that quote-unquote white validation. Yeah, we knew them girls could sing, but when they were on the MTV VMAs, that's when everyone's like, have you heard of Chloe? And how I'm like, yes, we have.
But making it means something totally different now, too, with internet. Like, we kind of decide, and even thinking about us and the spaces we're in, we decide what success is for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for as much as Chief Keef has never been on the internet, I mean on the radio in several years, Finito is still less than Finito coming to club. It's going up. You saw that house party where the floor caved in.
That was always my biggest college fear. Like, literally, I was the one drunk and also going, wait, what's the head count? Are we at capacity?
Does the fire marshal know what's happening here?
You go down to U of I, being them tight ass parties on Clark Street, be like, I know this tonight I'm going to die.
Exactly.
Like, this is it.
So sometimes you popping, even whether or not the mainstream pays attention. And mm-hmm. I think that's a good lesson for Black creatives, where we pop in and we sometimes seek validation, or like you want that next thing to prove to you that you've made it to this certain level. And being on the other side of that to some degree with, you know, some of the stations I had a chance to work for, it's like, it doesn't really matter as long as you're able to take care of yourself, as long as you're doing what you want to do and you're creating. We need to get to the point where we define success for ourselves. So by all other counts, I mean, you know, Chloe and Halle doing their thing.
They are, and their bank account still at this current time has more commas than mine. I will be there.
My bank account has one comma.
Okay. Like, also, let's know when I say bank account, I count what I've saved. So I'm just like, for me, it's like I can officially say I have a savings.
Right. Yes. Praise him. Praise him. Sally Mae can't touch this one. Yeah.
Don't,
can't
knock touch on that all account. The wood. But something else that happened this week. Dwight Howard. So.
Oh, man. I've been avoiding this on every platform. I've been hosting shows on GM Radio. I've been avoiding this. We're doing it. This is happening.
We are. So I guess it reads truly like a real life version of like an Elin Harris novel. Like I literally, when I was like scrolling through the blog posts and the stories and trying to compare audio, like do it sound like them? It does. I don't know. This is such a multi-layered shit show for me. And it all comes down to, I think, not allowing people to live in their truth, as well as the lengths. And let me say, if this alleged case of him being in a relationship with a transgender woman is true, if it is true, then I think it's something like the lengths that people will go to protect the facade because they're so afraid to be who they are.
Yeah.
Especially like, when you're an athlete, no one comes out. No, nobody even remember Michael Sam. No one comes out. It's
true.
I still want to live this way. You knew what the rules were when you mentioned. And I'm just going to put it out. The reason why I really thought the story was believable, I will never reveal names, but I've been heard about stories happening like this in the NBA. Even on some local shit.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just like, this ain't my first time thinking like, oh, man, your favorite NBA stars just might be gay.
Do you think trans women perpetuate this in a way?
I think it's, I can't speak as, I'm a cisgender, you know, for the most part, black woman, right? Or, you know, what I will say is trans women are considered the bottom of the bottom by society. And the thing is, I think a lot of times they truly walk through life feeling like this is the closest that I can get to having happiness. Now, I'm going to bring up one of my favorite shows. Pose is fucking amazing. That first season was bomb. I'm sitting here like, where's...
My homie was breaking down...
Oh my God, it's good.
...what she learned in Pose. I've never seen the show, but she was... because I don't got the HBO app. But she was... She was breaking down to me what she learned about the trans culture and how it helped her to understand what it is that they go through. And she was kind of breaking it down to me, helping me understand that, like how so many of them become sex workers and that whole type of thing. I never thought about it.
And or even the case of like just the amount of trans women, like when we think about sexual assault or, you know, hate crimes, there's always trans women that will have their own existence turns against them and then can wind up dead. Because you're so, I was minding my business. You decided to holler at me. You realize in the moment that, oh, she may not be quote unquote a natural born woman. And now you willing to beat my head in because you're upset that I was living my life. That happens a lot of times. So the one reason I brought up Pose was, one of the main characters, she made the statement, a situation had happened, and she was, like, talking about her anatomy. And she was like, this one thing, she was like, I hate it with everything I have because this one thing is what keeps me from living the life I want. She was like, I want a husband. I want kids. I will never have that because of this one thing. So she was like, so don't ask me to now explain myself based around those parameters. So I think when you look at it from that lens, it isn't that I think trans women are perpetuating it. I think at times, like, society does not accept even the definition of a trans woman.
The reason I asked that question is because the big story here, and I want to make sure this doesn't get lost, is the fact that Dwight's associates allegedly threatened this woman.
Right. The pastor.
The pastor. Dwight's pastor, so-called pastor, allegedly threatened this woman. And so... We gotta make sure that that's uplifted. But there's also the understanding that she has the agency to out him and expose him. And it's culture of outing, exposing. Aha, I got you. further perpetuates the idea that what he was doing was taboo. And we know it was taboo. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for me to articulate it. But it's like the fact that you say...
Someone's like Catch 22?
Yes, it's like, he was with me. Hi. This is what... I record the conversation. This is what had da-da-da. It's like, if there were any other NBA players who were considering coming out, it's like, well, this is why I won't do it. Because I've given my heart to this trans woman. And I don't know if I can trust this person. And so it kind of creates a... I don't know. Just in general, let's take it out of the Dwight Howard situation. Mm-hmm. Just in general, just this culture of calling people out in these situations where it's like putting people on blast and screenshots and recording conversation. It's just made it so that we look at people's lives like a spectacle. And so that if someone wants to live in their truth, how is that going to make anybody more comfortable to do that? You dig what I'm saying? So I don't know, man. I'm scared to even touch the topic. I hope I ain't say nothing wrong. But I just feel like, you know, and, you know, Dwight got to be smart if that's the life you choose to live, you know, dating a popular author. Because I was looking at this person.
And
that doesn't seem like a smart thing to do. She got a book coming out.
There was multiple layers to this that I was like, oh, sweetheart, you did this to yourself. But when I look at it, I personally, and this has nothing to do with this young woman being trans, I just personally would have questioned it from the perspective of the book, the popularity, what is her track record? Does she seem like she's a messy person?
Right.
Is she about sensationalism? Because even when I was looking at some of her book titles, I'm like, well, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Forget her being trans. Let her just be a woman, trans woman. She's a woman.
Right.
She's a person. They're dating their partners. Whatever. This is messy.
And that's the thing. This wasn't, and it's.
Now, he brought it on himself if it's true that they threatened her. But just messy. She seemed like she was already writing, you know, these types of things.
Or at least like the recording part. Now, yeah. I guess that's the thing. I looked at it from the first part of like, was she doing that more so because she thought like, I don't think this is going to end well and I want to protect myself. But I'm like, I personally, when I'm dating someone, I don't care what status I've dated men that were, you know, regular Joe Schmoes. And I was never I never thought to like, let me have this in my back file in the event.
Right.
That you gonna act a fucking fool. Because my thing is like, sweetie, I'm from the low end. We gonna act a fool together.
And she said it on Twitter. She said, you know, as soon as I, you know, once he reached out to me and jumped in my DMs, I said, hit me from your fake account because I'm used to talking to celebrities. So this is a game that she's used to playing.
Right.
You know, and so that's the part that it's like, no one deserves to be victimized, but we do have to be conscientious of people who weaponize the idea that they can talk about being victimized.
Right.
And I don't want that to delegitimize people who are really going through these types of situations.
And if that passes, if it's still, no matter what, though, I will say, even if she's messy or not, don't nobody deserve
to get threatened at all.
So,
because you ain't man enough, if that was him on the phone call, because you ain't man enough to talk about the lifestyle that you live in. You want to threaten somebody because they're living in their truth and you scared for them to talk about the truth that y'all living together. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And a pastor just doing them up. But let's get off that for a second. The reason why I'm sensitive to this idea of outing people or whatever the case may be, I'm starting to realize like I'm a cisgender heterosexual male. I'm dealing with sisters on a day-to-day basis. In journalism, there are more women. I'm on a women's podcast right now. More women than men in journalism, it feels like. I interact with a lot of sisters. I'm friendly, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't realize that I was starting to gain a bigger profile until a few years ago when it would come back to me because I'm friends with so many women that somebody is talking about the interaction they've had with me. You know what I mean? Just being friendly. You know what I'm saying? Just normal stuff. Yeah, come to the artist. I'm really just trying to invite people to my events or whatever like that.
You didn't say come to the crib. Let me make you paella.
Yeah, come to the artist lounge.
Come to Stony Island Arts Bank. There's an event here.
Yes, like, yeah. And sometimes it gets misconstrued and it's like
let me see. I'm a Leo. He a Gemini. This are you like,
girl. How you know I dated a lot of Leos too?
That was the first thing that came.
Yeah. So you know her. You know Shorty. So it's like
Ali was like, wait, what?
But it's like, man, you know, I'm a Z-list celebrity, and it's like people want to, you're going to use, you know, little interactions to create this idea of putting this thing out, like, oh, I've interacted with this person. And I'm sure it's even worse for women who are in the industry, because if you, I mean, don't let you go on a date with somebody and they like, oh, you know, the girl Julia has questions, you know, with the podcast and shit. You know,
I'm happy to say I'm not there yet.
You're not? Okay.
Or maybe it's been delusional to myself.
I'm about to prophesy. It's going to be an added, as this platform grows, it's going to be an added concern about who you can trust and who you speak to and what, you know, the smartest thing for me was getting a relationship, because it keeps me out of trouble and troubling interactions. A single man, you say things that you wouldn't say if you're in a relationship.
True.
You interact with women in ways you wouldn't.
Or I'll even say this for someone who respects their relationship. Word. Because being in this industry and being in the arts, we've seen a lot of Mo's. That guy, whole ass wives, whole ass relationships, and they talking to you. Like, so are we going to Sip and Save after this? Like, whoa,
you're
going home.
And don't get me wrong, I mean, I had to learn too what was, in some ways, I men can be oblivious. I'll speak for myself. I can be oblivious. So I had to learn what gives people the wrong idea. So
exactly.
I'm not absolving myself from blame in a situation where somebody got the wrong idea. But man, we just got to get out of this culture of just trying to like put people on blast. I feel like, man. You know, somebody is right here putting a comment under this post like, some people deserve to get put on blast.
No one deserves that.
Yeah, I don't know. And so, you know, and I bring that up in light of Dwight Howard theme, and it's like, you know, how are we going to create a situation where we normalize queer relationships if people are outing people and using it as a way of punishing them?
Right.
You dig what I'm saying?
And I'm like, so you gonna out me and think I'm gonna be with you?
Yeah.
That was the biggest piece for me. I'm like,
Right. Or out him and think that more people are gonna be comfortable being forthcoming with their lifestyle.
No.
You know what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong with a queer lifestyle if that's how you get down. You know, you ain't hurt nobody else. But you know, when you out people, I don't know. I think it's just, you know, somebody should, I don't know. I don't know.
Let's just wrap it. Let's wrap it.
Can we
you're right.
Yeah.
He's like, let's just talk about a simple place and time.
Yeah.
No, but thank you so much in terms of like just even your commentary, the perspective on that, because that also, I think, bespeaks to just a black man being comfortable with himself. I can't tell you how many be like, wait, nah, man, I ain't here for this gay shit. And I'm just like, take your toxic teddy ass the hell out my house. So
toxic teddy. Like, that's what they call it. Toxic teddy.
I'm like, so the fact that even to have just a normal conversation, it's sad to say that that's considered like, oh, that was refreshing, you know? Because it's very far and few in between that you can like even have these type of conversations with like typically cisgender black men.
Oh, word.
Because anything is like, that's not reflected on me, is it? Like, let me shake the gay off me. Like, that's not how it works.
Right. It's not, it doesn't have, it doesn't jump on you. It's not a virus.
Right. That's not how that goes. But, well, I do not know what you all will be drinking come cupping season 2019 that is currently upon us. But for those long, lonely winter nights where he lied and said he was coming over and he did not, make sure that you have Cavassier VSOP to ease the pain. It kept us posted in the summertime, and it'll definitely be here for the wintertime with that smooth, velvety taste that we all love. So make sure whatever you are drinking, that it is Cavassier VSOP. And now back to Joy Has Questions. Moving right along, it is time.
Uh-oh.
Yes, I feel like Rafiki. Moving right into, so I have a question.
Uh-huh.
We about to fry these bitches off. I'm ready.
Yo, I feel so lame because she did it. I was like, oh, she said a punchline. She said a thing.
I will find a way to slide it in. In terms of like getting my Lion King quote.
Right, we'll slide it in then. Okay.
Let's just get right into it in terms of actually watching this very Simba-like ascension. Like, I just feel like your ass one day looked up and was just like, you know, I am on Pride Rock, bitch, and I am not climbing down.
I'll tweet that right. I'm on Pride Rock, bitch, and I ain't coming down. Like,
I'm here for it. I just want credit.
Yes.
When it comes down to you making, you know, the decision to be in the arts, to be, you know, this really, I feel, a face of Chicago, What made you, I remember your ass as like a little boy in Beasley before you like left us and was like, I'm on to bigger and better. So like, have you always had this personality or were you always as a kid just like, man, I'm about to grow up and like take over this TV shit? Like, how did this go?
I didn't even want to do TV. If you remember, you remember me, Josh Stapleton, Daryl.
Cam, I see Daryl all the time. I mean,
do you? Mm-hmm. Amaru. These are all friends of mine in grammar school, and we just used to freestyle at the lunch table. So my dream was mostly hip hop, and I wasn't as forthcoming and confident, but I was always writing rhymes when I was a kid. Like, you know, mostly those five or those four, however many of us it was. Those are the people. And Devin.
Devin Threes.
So that was
what
my best
the hell?
Friend, man.
Are you serious?
Later on, you know, Devin was my best friend, man.
No.
That was my best friend. He
Devin
lived down the street
so weird
and around
to
the corner.
He always reminded me of the kid. I was like, I know you eating glue and
no,
secret.
No. Devin had hoes. Still got him to this day.
Wow.
Unless he's in a relationship. Then scratch that from
was,
the records.
But
no, he did. Well, I ain't seen him in a few years. So, Devin, you know, I got you. Alley-oop, boom. You know, I cleared it up. But, you know, I haven't kicked it with him in a few years. But these were my guys. And I was writing since I was a shorty. And when I left Beasley, moved to Cal City and started meeting up with other cats and doing recording and rapping, that was what I wanted to do. And I always say this, especially when I teach summer programs and do literary workshops and whatnot, rap gives you confidence unlike any other genre. You can't be a timid rapper. You can't look at the floor. Yeah, you got
to. We saw Eight Mile. We know what happened to
you
Rabbit.
You feel what I'm saying? You know what happened to B-Rabbit? You don't want to be B-Rabbit throwing up on yourself. Look at you. You're a mess. Nah, you want to hit the stage. You want to be, you have to be boisterous. You got to be confident. You got to be well-spoken. Have to learn how to enunciate if you care about lyrics. And those were things that translated into doing journalism. But journalism happened accidentally. I still don't necessarily love journalism. It's just what I do. And it's just what I, you know, become somewhat good at.
Okay. Well, you're mastering it.
Thank
now,
you.
It's funny now. I see, I don't comment all the time, but I'll, like, see people, like, comment on your posts and stuff. And I'll be sitting there going, like, you know good and goddamn well. Like, he was not there shooting with him in jail.
He
was
shooting in jail, yeah.
But I'm like, I'm just going to watch him respond with that PR. Thank you for your support. like the beginning of these PBS ass shows. But
that's funny.
Is that something that how do you like basically level that? Or I should say level set that? Because I know sometimes like you definitely have to have those moments of being like, I should just have my little feeling myself moment. Just be like, yes, despite your lack of support, I'm here. Or is it really just a thing of like, just keep it moving?
Tunnel vision and no one owes you anything.
Good point.
No one owes you their support and you have to earn people's support. And then we always talk about, you know, the memes and posts and people talk online about, you know, your friends and family support this celebrity and to post their content and post their stuff, but they won't post yours. Sometimes you want your friends and family to remain friends and family, because when you get to the point where they're constantly reminding you of who you are on television or who you are on radio, you have really lost a friend and they turned into a fan. And sometimes you want to come home and be who you really are. You want to be Doma T. You don't want to sit down and talk about what you got coming up, because, I mean, shit is stressful. And
it
so
is.
You don't want to come home and stress out about that type of stuff. And why would you? Sometimes we look for support from people who aren't even into what we're doing. So it's like, you never liked rap music. You don't like rap music. Why would you post my mixtape?
Right.
You know, but because you're my cousin, you have to post it. So, you know, people text me stuff and I become more forthright and I'm like, I don't like this type of music. I think if this is the genre that you're going for, you're doing the Lil Uzi
find
Vert thing.
Audience.
You find your target audience. Your friends and family aren't your target audience. Let them remain your friends and family.
Right.
And so once I got there, I realized that they didn't owe me anything and I didn't deserve their support until I put the work in. And then when I put the work in, I want support from people I've never seen before, because that means if I'm sitting here thirsty about whether or not Joy is going to support me, that means that I'm not paying attention to someone in LA who I should be vying for their support because they're the one with the check. So I don't give a damn who don't or will support me, because the work will eventually speak for itself.
That definitely is something that I'm not going to lie. Like, it took me a while to get to. And I'm
it's
still,
very hard.
It's still a work in progress because, and it wasn't a friends and family thing. If anything, it was the opposite. My friends and family were always like, well, you do this already. Like, this is your niche. This is your spot. Figure this out. And I'd be like, y'all just playing. Y'all just saying that because we like friends and family, right? I think the bigger thing for me was just from the professional spaces I was in, like people, or rather maybe certain people that I thought would be more positive or actually like assist more. And at the time they didn't. It's like now the funny thing, I still see them in the same circles, like, you know, and it's cordial, but it, sometimes it's, you know, still takes me a while to like let it go from the back of the head.
I feel that.
And just be like,
I'm there though.
I'm keeping
I mean, you know, I be knowing how to respond to questions like that. You know what I'm saying? To make myself not sound petty, but I'm there though. What it made me do though, we need these experiences because it makes you passionate about opening doors for other people.
Oh my God.
So now I'm like, I'm going to be everything that so-and-so wasn't to me.
It really, and even when it, when I think about like mentorship, right? I do have mentees, but I always tell them, I'm like, it is not my job to make you another me. It is my job as your mentor to make you the best you.
I'm
like, now if you need help figuring who that is, that's what I'm here for. But I'm not about to sit here and be like, oh, you doing this wrong. Like, this gonna fuck up your opportunities. No. Because my thing is, I'm supposed to empower you and encourage you. Now, if you out here just making dumbass decisions, I'm like, girl, if you don't get your ass, like, sit down. But that's not what I want, or that's not the type of mentor I want to be.
I remember I was at this thing covering T.D. Jakes when he dropped his book, Instincts. And he said this thing, there was a pastor in the audience that asked a question. He said, can you tell me how you're able to grow your church to as large as it is? I'm a pastor in Chicago, blah, 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 blah. And T.D. Jakes said, there is nothing, you know, with the spit, the list. There is nothing that I know that I will not tell you. And so basically, I'm going to tell you everything. Such a simple statement, but for me, something. And then let me know that he was speaking from a place of abundance, a place of there's enough for everybody.
Yes.
And the problem is when we look for mentorship, we're looking up to these people, but we don't realize they see us as competition. We don't realize that their space is, they feel like their space is limited, which it's not. I can't replace you. You've been doing that for 30 something years. You know
it's
what I'm
like
saying?
Like watching Nicki Minaj just.
Yeah, go in on Cardi.
Rail against the wind.
She's I'm losing like, it. It's their own insecurities. So be encouraged when you see people in spaces who should support you, but won't, because it's an affirmation that you got the sauce and they see it and they don't want to help you because they know that there's a possibility you could take their spot. And it makes you, you know, makes you not feel bad that when you do. So when you do take that spot and when you do chew them up, it's like, I want to work with you. But you know what I'm saying? When I step on you on the way up, it's not going to, you're not going to feel bad about it because you had an opportunity to open this door for me. Now they're letting you go and now I got to sit in that seat. Sorry. If you would have brought me here, we could have worked together.
It's so hard to say goodbye to hit the note. Dang. I don't know why you gotta like put the
you gotta put the finger on the earlobe to make sure you're in the key.
It really helps. But so even moving along, like with your seeing how you got interested and started, what sacrifices have you had to make in order to like really grind it out and be in the position that you are in? Because I think a lot of times people are just like, oh, well, he has a voice. And I just one day looked up and he was on WVON. And I guess like he just put himself in the right rooms. But truly, like, how were you able to differentiate yourself from all of the competition?
I remember when I was in broadcasting school, because I went to undergrad for economics. I didn't go to school for journalism. And I went to a vocational school for broadcasting. And one of the first, you know, my early interactions with radio legends was, you're going to have to leave the market and then come back if you want to be on air in this market. I know. And it's for the most part true. If you win a top three market, it's for the most part true. But I figured, I asked them, how long did it take you to pop on? You know, they're like 10 years or whatever it is. And I'm like, if I work twice as hard as you did, then I can make it happen in 5 years. So I was working almost 20 hours a day for like 2 years straight. and you can attest to this. We were supposed to schedule for lunches. I've overslept on meetings, and I had to finally confront some of my weaknesses and said, if I'm going to drive myself this hard, then I need help. And I had to get people to help me schedule things and other people to help me with logistics. But just to give you a picture, when I was interning at WVON before I became news director, I was working there from 6 to 9 a.m. And then I went to the Illinois Media School from like 10 to 2. And then from there, I went to the North Side when I was multimedia director from like 2 to 10 to work on some things with them. And I was just constantly learning. And that was 5 days a week. And so it was like, you know, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. over and over. And you learn so much. Every event that I could go to, every workshop, every single, you know, function, every professional organization that looked at me like the help the following year looked at me like somebody who, you know, was worthy of respect. Yeah. And so it's just putting the hours in. There's no shortcuts. But the only shortcut is do more work, more, sure. You know. And so to make a long story short, I took on as many jobs as I could. I said yes to everything. I read a lot. I had this chip on my shoulder having not gone to J school. And I said that then I got to be twice as good. As they tell us, when you black, you got to be twice as good and work as hard to get half of what they got. And I'm like, man, if I do that times four, I can take all of what they got. And so that was the main thing. And then the other thing, the major key is treat the secretary like the CEO.
So you say secretary, I was always told you treat the doorman the same as the CEO.
There
and
you
my
go.
Dad was
okay.
just saying, sometimes you treat the doorman better. I know that might sound weird.
Okay. No, well, not to me, but yeah, maybe to people in podcast land.
I think it might sound weird, but the thing is, those are the people that are forgotten. Because the doorman, he's always opening the door. No one, like maybe, hi, mm-hmm. George, hi this. But when I think about how I would even have crafted certain situations that happened to me, like mm-hmm. case in point, there was this really bomb ass internship that everyone wanted at Roosevelt University. It was with the marketing department, and it was going to be on like the whole statewide campaign they were doing. And so I was sitting there, and like every day I would go upstairs, and the line to the president's office was fucking insane. And I'm just like, I'm wasting time.
Smart.
So finally I sat and I thought about it, and I was like, Mr. George, who had been the doorman at Roosevelt
forever. Always a Mr. George.
Ever. He was like the sweetest black man. And I always said hi to him. Mm-hmm. I think I just also personally liked him because I have an Uncle George. And they are like around the same age. And so I finally asked him. I was like, Mr. George. I was like, he saw me. He was like, what's wrong, Ms. George? And I was like, I cannot get to the president's office. And I'll never forget. He was like, oh, he's like, I'll help you with that. He was like, I know when the president comes down every day for lunch. Mm. And he was like, you need to catch him. Literally like an elevator pitch. He was like, that's when you need to catch him. And sure enough, that's when I called him and gave him my resume.
There you go.
But that was because the doorman, mm-hmm. you know, those little black moments of like people always holding you down.
Yes.
And I got the internship. There but I would have been like a needle in a haystack.
Yes.
Trying to secure it. And that was my first actual statewide campaign. There was a microsite that went with it and everything. I gave that man the biggest hug. I bought him lunch for like a month. And he was just like, you don't have to feed me. I'm like, no.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting you all the Chicago style Al's beef.
That was his joint. But yeah, I couldn't have told a better story. Like the CEO sees the doorman every day.
Mm-hmm.
Or the secretary. That is who they trust. When you go in that interview and you leave out, the CEO talks to the secretary and say, yo, what'd you think of that candidate?
Right.
What'd you think?
That's their right hand.
And Keisha's going to be like, he walked right past me. So didn't even speak.
Right.
Like, and that, I think people forget that. And so a lot of my opportunities have come from people who you wouldn't think had power. And, I take them to lunch. We'd have coffee. I'm not trying to finesse. It's people who I genuinely have a connection with. You link up with them. They're cool. They're just down-to-earth people. Whatever. And those have been the people that have put me in front of, just like you, with the decision makers. And I think that a lot of people who I've seen do things the wrong way, especially in Chicago, where we value titles and clicks and all of this, that's where I've seen people go wrong.
Have you ever had I know this has happened to me, so I'm going to ask you.
Where?
Have you ever had like a moment of like, ha, that's what you get? when like someone, you just, hey, how you doing? And they're just like, hello. And then they find out like, bitch, I'm on the panel. or they didn't realize it was you. Now it's like, oh, hey, how are you? It's like, when I see that flip, when I see that change, that makes me know like, no, we don't need to do business, or I don't need to keep engaging. Because when you thought I was no one, you didn't have like zhuzh or like yeah. any sort of like sweetness.
Oh, that's a game I play. When I go to events, my thing is, if I'm hosting an event, I go and make my rounds around the room. Originally, it was because I know that if people have never heard of me, if I go and shake their hand, smile at them, tell a joke, laugh with them, whatever, kick it, then when I get on stage, they're not going to let me bomb because they like me.
Right.
You know, we've made an acquaintance.
There's psychology behind that.
Yes. Even if they don't like me, they feel familiar with me. You know, you got to sit and listen to me for the next 3 hours. So, you know, more or less, you know me, you know, you're going to give me a chuckle even if I tell a stupid, corny joke, right? So that's what I do. But I take notice in my mind of the people who dismiss me. I'm usually the youngest person in the room, usually the blackest person in the room. And yeah, that's I actually posted that out. And there's a media blog, a real well-known media blog in Chicago, Robert Feeder, who retweeted that tweet when I tweeted out, man, I love making my rounds in the room, see who plays me, and then look at their face when they see me on a panel or see me hosting. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I
hit it with that slight leg cross.
You hit him with the leg
with the tailor. Come on, with like the tailor. Right, like,
come on, with the
socks.
With the socks that match the tie. Come on. Baby, you know what's going on.
And they're going like,
exactly.
Got to do better.
Yes. It happens every single time. And because we're on the end of it, I learned how to do that to other people. And I try my best not to make sure, no matter what mood I'm in, that I'm giving that person the respect they deserve. So you never know where people are, where they're going to end up. And, you know, thankfully, I don't hold grudges. But
I've gotten better.
I don't. Yeah, I really don't. I genuinely do not hold grudges. But there's a difference between, hey, do you know Joy? Oh, that's my homie. Like, blah, 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 blah. And do you know Joy? Yeah.
Yes. I have done
anything
that
else?
Are you hitting with
I'm not going to say anything negative about you, but I ain't got nothing positive
see,
to say either.
That's where you go. Yeah, and mine is, I'm acquainted.
Oh, see, you're petty. See, you hold grudges. We need to rebuke that. In the name of Jesus, we come against that
now,
spirit.
Say, first off, people know I use a lot of words, so I'm acquainted. Actually, it's something I would say.
I'm acquainted. I know that's if I ask about somebody, you say I'm acquainted, I'm like, okay, say less.
Right.
I'm deleting the number. If I ask you about somebody, you say I'm acquainted, I'm deleting the number. So,
but no,
I don't throw salt on it. But I mean, there've been tons of opportunities. I got some stuff brewing right now where I've reached out to some people and. This is one of those lame things that interviewees do. It like, I can't talk about it yet. But it's like...
No, that's the smart thing. The ink is not dried, and I don't need to mess up whatever promo they have for this.
Exactly. And there have been people that I've tried to throw alley-oops to that, you know, haven't been as responsive, but they're usually responsive after the ink dries. And it's like...
I need you to be here with the mustard seed face. Yeah. Don't be sitting here waiting when you didn't watch the Red Sea part. And I'm like, oh no, we're coming.
Yeah. And the reason I don't hold grudges is because I realized that maybe that wasn't for them in their season. Maybe they put some negative energy elsewhere in the atmosphere and God didn't want to bless them with that. Or maybe God blessed them with something better just because mm-hmm. I think what I got over here is good for them. Doesn't necessarily mean that's what it is. It may
and
not
you know
translate.
What? You could be saving yourself also from a headache. Because
absolutely.
There's nothing worse than presenting an opportunity when someone's not ready to walk through the door. So if you're sitting there trying to pull them and like, well, why, you know, you frustrating yourself. And it's just like, well, what would have happened if they would have been a part of the project and they aren't following through? You pull in double weight. So now they dead weight. Now the people that you've made that business arrangement looking at everybody crazy.
That's a fact. That's a fact. So, you know, it's frustrating because I have such this passion to help people along the way, if I can. I don't want to speak from a position of I'm not on Pride Rock. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to speak a position like I made it there yet. But I just know that when, you know, I was at the point that I see some people now, I wish I had a me just to tell them, hey, I've been through that door before. We've had those conversations. You've mentored me and I've mentored you. You're like, yo, how do you handle this situation? Yeah, I've been there. Do this like this. I didn't have that. So I got to lean on people who are my same age. And when I reach down at a shorty and I'm like, man, you're lucky to have somebody who's been here before And if they don't want to respond, you know, That's fine.
I'll see you soon.
They've got their own blessings too, you know, that and we'll still be cool.
That's bomb. So let me just slightly pivot because I do want to wrap it up on a personal note because I think that's the thing. Everyone knows you.
I told you I get my answers be too long, man. You wrapping up already?
No, you're fine. Jasmine ain't sent me the evil eye text yet, so we good. What I did want to know. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you were grinding so hard. And that's the thing. Everyone knows Doman T, especially if you're in the Chicagoland area. You know, man, he's with WGN Radio. You know, you're doing all these things with your own. I think you're restarting back up the Artist Lounge.
No, not yet. We're not doing that yet because I got to work. I got to head out of town to work on a project for the next few weeks. Okay. So, the Artist Lounge was an open mic. It was dope. It was at Southside Community Arts Center. And it was beautiful. It was black people coming together to listen to poetry and affirmations and music. And, oh, man, it was different, like, than any other poetry set. You know, we were live. And, we haven't had a chance to bring that back, though.
Okay, got you. But just in general, like, you are an authentically branded person, because there's a lot of people I know that are branded. It's just like, girl, this is not, or boy, I know this is not the real you. But you have mentioned this young lady multiple times, which that in itself is beautiful, definitely worth accommodation. She's a powerhouse in her own right. I know you are dating the super talented Gifted Keys.
Oh.
She's so pretty, y'all. Is like, for okay. Whatever. Shorty sis, cool. Let me tell you, even off the mic, he's like, that's bad. I'm just like, how did you all meet? Like, how did you know when you met her that this right here, this is what we doing?
This is the first time I ever talked about that on a podcast. So
yay!
Joy definitely be having questions.
But positive ones, not messy. Because this is quote unquote cuffing season. Our generation can't hold conversations or follow through. And you clearly, I mean, not saying like you all are like Denzel and Paula and y'all like 30 years in the game, but you are building a foundation that a lot of us want. So how was that?
It's precious. So it's like, that's why I usually don't.
Don't give us details.
No, it's cool. I'm going to give you details because there ain't nothing to talk about. The how we met is pretty cool. But it's like, just going on that note, it's very difficult to keep something precious like a relationship because it seems like once you put out there that you got a girl, it's like the energy just, oh my God.
Did you find?
Oh my God, the pussy just flies at you, man. It's crazy.
I was about to say, is that not crazy how it's almost like the DMs double?
Oh my God. Well, I mean, because
if
you're with the right person, they're going to sauce you up. So I also have to acknowledge she has made me more attractive, not just by the fact that she found and I'm with her, but I mean, she's dressing me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a lot of stuff that she recommends that I do
that makes me more attractive. Y'all listen, he said this now multiple times in different ways, but I need people to understand this. Women bring ambiance. We bring those little fine points that y'all don't think about. Y'all will walk into an apartment and have three hots in a cot, and I'm like, this is prison that you are paying rent for. A woman will walk in, all of a sudden you niggas got towels. Y'all got little monograms. There's actually, you know, air freshener throughout the home, not just in one room. It's like, we will dress you, be like, babe, that color or the size, the tailoring is doing nothing for you.
Yes, facts. A woman makes a house a home, man. But how we met, she came to a screening at a WVON event. And, you know, she would say that she just felt the urging that she needed to introduce herself to me. She'd known me already because she had saw one of my videos One of These Days. And she's a singer, a jazz vocalist, and she loves real hip hop and lyricism. So she was a fan of the video. She loved the music. And so she's like, I have to. And she just felt something that said she had to introduce herself. So she introduced herself to me. The station I was working at is talk radio, and it's black talk radio. So normally the listenership is a little older. And to have somebody younger than me, like 5 years younger than me, walk up on me and say, yo, you know, how you doing? I heard of you. I love your music. She ain't 5 years younger, maybe 3 years. But she like, yo, I've heard your music, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yo, it was mind blowing to me. I'm like, how did you find out about that? So just same thing we're talking about mentorship. She was someone that I was like, you know, immediately I saw she was attractive, but I didn't want to do anything romantic because I was just getting to the space where I felt like I had to be responsible with myself and my platform. And I said, hey, anything you need, I got you. I'll randomly invite her to shows. If she was in the area and got done doing an event, needed help bringing speakers and bags to the car, I would just pop up and do it. But it was truly platonic. I was like legitimately just helping out. And I've never before felt this thing where it was like, you have to help her, like help this woman, just help her. You know what I'm saying? So I was just helping. And then one night I was drunk. And I was with my boy and I'm like, gee, she bad, bro. I've been trying to, I mean, she cool. I don't want to cross that line because then I truly value her friendship, her as a person. If I cross that line and tell her I'm feeling her, then she gonna think I'm a sleaze and that I've been nice all this time.
Just to get because something.
Yeah, and it genuinely was, I just saw somebody with talent who, first of all, I thought she was already far along because at the time that I met her, she had gone viral with a couple million views on World Style Hip Hop from singing an Erykah Badu song. She has alopecia, so her hair was in patches in the video. It grows in weird patches. And so she had like this weird hairdo, but her voice was amazing. And so just that little thing made it go viral and had people talking and all this stuff. And I just thought she should be further along, and she was. And
boy, you gonna make me get this banana pudding out. Yeah, I thought you were gonna be like, well, let me sit back and just listen.
Yeah,
like,
so
this
you
is
know,
a testimony,
right? And my bad, I'm being so long winded, but I just thought, you know, I just wanted to help her. And then, you know, I'm like, yo, what's up? And she was like, what's up? And we was like, hey, ooh, hey, hey. And, then, and now we together.
How long have you all officially been together?
A year and several months.
See, okay. And what I love about that, so I know the official part.
Yes.
But there was the building up into that.
Yes.
Into like actually getting to know the person.
Yes.
And that's the one piece that I find our generation, we're so microwavable.
Like yeah,
if you
yeah,
get
yeah.
on my nerve, I can just swipe left or I can just block you.
Facts.
Or I don't have to actually address what naturally will happen with human interactions. You're not going to like somebody 24/7, or you have to learn how to communicate with that person,
yeah.
even for a friendship. So I love the fact that there was the sincere investment on both of you all's parts
Word.
To get to know each other.
Facts.
And also not even, you know, mess up the situation just because you were like, well, he cute, she fine. Like, and let's just, you know.
Right.
Have fun, quote unquote.
Right.
And now it's something that could have been like amazing.
No, it's true. Oh, yeah. We got to know each other for a while, and that really helped because the thing that makes me faithful and that makes men faithful in general is like if your partner is your friend, you don't want to do your friend in. You know what I mean? So, like.
We need cigars and wine. Like, I'm literally, like, Friday, you know. I'm re-upping the box from High Park Cigars. And we didn't drink all the Hennessy or Cavassier X. Oh, no, we got a little bit left.
Got a little bit. Let me get some.
Okay.
But it's like, it's kind of messed up because it's like, not to say that your partner who you with romantically, that should just be enough. But I mean, it's hard. Like, I'm not going to front. I'm not a perfect guy. I'm not, you know,
whatever.
It
should be your haven.
But yeah, and if that's your friend, it's like, that's my nigga. Like, you know, Gifted is my nigga. So I'm not gonna make my nigga look bogus, G. Like, you the homie. Like, she
right.
was the friend before anything. She the homie, so yeah.
I love that. And definitely, like, I truly can tell that even past like amorous feelings, like there's a respect there in y'all relationship
right.
as two people.
That's dope.
No, I'm serious. And
that's dope.
I am never going to be out here. I'm not doing the listener letters and opinions. I clearly am single, you know, whenever got that alignment, whatever. But
she's so single, y'all. I just had to. I'm sorry. If there were subtitles,
take that
I would make them.
Like,
I would have made
them. I'm always looking at, we need a code for you to be like. Or like maybe this, like, take it out. But
I got homies.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, back to this interview.
Yes. Uh-huh.
This ain't mine.
Okay. Also, I gotta turn my head off. Okay. Stop interviewing. Okay.
But no, I think that's the thing. So how do you all like find the time and the balance? And that's like truly the way I wanted to wrap it up and end it, just
okay.
in the sense of like when you're looking at this ascension. And yes, you climb in this prior record, the jokes you've been making, or you where you see your career path. How important is that balance for you? Because you can turn into, you know, who's that black billionaire that I can't stand? He owned the Bobcats. the black one.
Michael Jordan?
No.
He did. I think he owned a podcast. Anyway, black
billionaire. His friend. He owned BET. Bob,
Bob Johnson.
Bob Johnson, okay. Yes.
Ugh. I didn't know he owned a Bobcast. Okay.
Yeah, he did. Or he was the president. Yeah, so how do you, like, basically, when you were looking at that ascension, I could totally see you being, like, truly a media mogul. So in that
speak
aspect.
Speak that into my life. Thank you.
That's fine. We'll Thank be there you. Together.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Yes.
We said, going on that. Dominique, move your yacht. You know I told you I was parking over here.
Like, okay, fine. I guess.
So how do you see, like, you know, all of that playing in to one another when you look at, like, what I want my life to look like professionally, personally?
It's hard. I failed at relationships before because I didn't prioritize relationships. You know what I mean? I didn't. I'm like, how you mad that I gotta work when my work is part of the reason and my work ethic is part of the reason you like me? And that has always been a running theme of my relationships. But this relationship has taught me that it's not the fact that I have a scarcity of time. It's the fact that it seemed like I prioritized everything above this person. And as long as that person feels that they are a priority in your life, they don't give a damn what you do with their time. Because I'm only dating women who have scarce time too, because they're getting shit done. So
I ain't got all night to be sitting up here and giggling with your ass.
You did what
I
I'm saying?
I got deadlines. I got shit to plan.
So Gifty got songs to write, studio sessions. She's going, she mentors youth at the Salvation
but
Army.
I'm pretty sure she texts you, hey, babe, miss you doing this.
Yeah, but she knows, nah, I told her I'm doing a podcast tonight. Not one text.
Oh, well, hell. That's, whatever works for y'all relationship. But so that's what I'm saying.
But that's the thing. So we have clear conversations. And I talk to her about when I'm in a situation and I'm focused. And she's come up to my job before. She's been at the gig before. She's been on WGN radio singing and whatnot. And she's seen how intense it is, how much work I do in the studio. And so I'm like, so when you text me and I can't respond, this is why. You know, so she understands. And so it's clear communicating. It's clear understanding of what people's priorities are and being honest about what you can handle. So now I'm like, can you handle someone who I get better with my responses, but I'll never be as responsive as the average person. Is that cool? Yep. And that's how we go.
Balance. Black balance. But that I think is the perfect way to end the interview, just because it has been so amazing having you on this show. I'm slightly more emotional than I thought it would be, but like truly, like, I've always admired your hustle and admired the fact that you are still super relatable and super humble for someone that has such a truly a bright future. So trust and believe, I wish nothing but, you know, the best for you. We definitely gonna be turning up in Ibiza one of these years, kicked back. Like, remember where we came from, my nigga. Remember.
Talking about where we came from. We in a High Park condo as we speak. Okay, you done made it. You getting big money.
What? I don't know.
Look at these microphones. How much
minding our business and blessings fall down.
But Joe, I appreciate you and I appreciate this platform and the fact that you open space for, I look at all the past people you had Lyric on here. Just homies and people that I respect, and we need more of this, and it allows me a chance to vent and articulate some of the things that are meaningful to me. So I appreciate the platform. So thank you.
I'm from the low end. I'm not about to cry. No. But no, thank you so much, love, for coming on the show. And everybody, definitely support this brother. We'll make sure to have all his social media handles so you can follow him. But
Domiti, Dometi.
Oh, yeah, true.
There
please,
it is.
It's not Domiti. It's Pongo, P-O-N-G.
It's not Dometi. Right. It's not Dometi. It's Dometi. Dometi.
Yes. Yeah. So, all right. And on that note, it is time to wrap it up with Joy's Motivational Message of the Week. Joy's motivational message for this week. I ain't got no motivation for y'all. No, I'm kidding. When it comes down to my motivation for this week, my motivational message for this week is worthless slave, you did what you were supposed to do. Now, I know y'all are like, this girl done lost her mind. You are fucking nuts. Let me at least back it up, as well as try and not curse and quote Bible scripture at the same time. When I say that, that's something that just popped into my head. My mom used to say that a lot to me. Like, sometimes I'd be like, man, you can't even cut me no slack. And she would take this one specific line. It's from a parable in the Gospels, basically. Jesus was talking to his, you know, disciples. And he tells them this story about how this rich man had two slaves. And so he was like, I have to go away for a long time. Basically, he told the slaves, like, flip my money, do whatever you can, but make sure, you know, my assets not only are protected, but they come back even better than they were before. The good slave basically was like, well, I'm going to do some trading, do some borrowing, and I'm going to give my master even more. The bad slave literally just dug a hole in the ground, covered the money over, and when the master came back, was like, look, I ain't getting no type of return on your investment. I ain't invested nothing. Here you go. Go for what you know, sis. And so the part of the parable that my mom always loves was when the master, like, looked at the bad slave and was like, well, why didn't you do what I asked you to do? And the slave's excuse was, well, I knew you were a demanding man and you always are complaining over something. Basically just going like, look, I did what I did and I don't care. And I remember the slave master, or not the slave master, but the master goes, well, if you knew that, that I was like that way, then worthless slave, you did what you were supposed to do, or you were supposed to do what I expected of you. So my mom loved taking that and, like, say it to me. Now, I am not coming from, you know, a place of negativity or a place of, you know, extraness. But the reason why I'm thinking about that today is there are moments where even if you get accommodation, or even if someone rewards you or acknowledges the effort, it is nice to have accommodation. It is nice to have people recognize all the hard work that you're putting in. But trust and believe, you are doing what you were supposed to be doing. You are on this planet to make it better. You are not on this planet just for your own self. And now that's something that this country, that our society does a really, really shitty job of lying and making it seem like, oh, you're just supposed to go for gold for yourself. That's not why you're here. You're here to be a testament to future generations that when you step foot on this planet, you are not just taking, you are giving, you are providing, you are beautifying, you are restoring, you are healing. That you are here to serve testimony to whatever your beliefs are, whoever put you here, is to that entity's glory, as well as to give pride to all those who have come before you. That is my personal belief as to why we're here. So whereas accommodation is amazing, and let's keep it real, we all love being told, bitch, you did that, or dude, you really out here hustling, you making moves. Don't allow the accommodation to block you from the fact that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and therefore there's more levels to ascend. Everyone, I don't care if your name is Barack Hussein Obama. I don't care if your name is Milli Vanilli. I don't give a fuck if your name is Beyonce. Whoever you are, there is always something to aspire for. There is always more work to be done. There is always more people that can be reached. There are always more levels to be climbed. So be happy with the accommodation, but don't think that it's something that, you know, you can just kick back and bask and now just ride the clout. Because that's when you just reflect all the things that I feel are personally wrong with this world, which is mediocrity, selfishness, and just a lack of love and compassion for one another. So let's do better. Let's be happy as the year winds down with all the strides that we made, but let's also at the same time keep pushing and progressing. Because worthless slave, you did what you were supposed to do. Just kidding, y'all. At the end of the day, I hope everyone has an amazing, beautiful week, and I will holler at you next time with Joy Has Questions.